Oye, Fabiruchis.
What's up, bish?
What if I could tell you that hiring could be easier?
Tell me more.
More streamlined and less time consuming. So even when you're busy, you could still be very smart about the way you hired.
Really? How?
With ZipRecruiter, you
What?
can post your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards with just one click.
What? Give me that piece of paper. Let me see. Then ZipRecruiter puts its smart matching technology to work, actively notifying qualified candidates about your job within minutes of posting, so you receive the best possible matches. Here you go.
No wonder 80% of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through their site in just one day.
ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by growing businesses of all sizes and industries to find the most qualified job candidates and immediate results.
Say that five times fast. And right now, my listeners, nope, our listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/Latinos.
That's ZipRecruiter.com/Latinos. One more time to try it. Time for to try it for free. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/Latinos.
ZipRecruiter. Hi, I'm Bobby Fav.
And this is Babelito.
And we are
Latinos Who Lunch, the podcast where we talk about important things like
waiting for tonight. Hello, hello, hello.
Que show.
Que show. Que show. Que show.
Nada, aquí nomás. Terminando de tragarse.
Oh
como siempre.
My God.
We grubbed.
Dude, those tacos were the bomb.net, dude.
Oh my God.
Oh.
You know, and I thought I got a lot of food.
Let.
A ver, can it,
you thought it wrong, bitch.
Uh-huh.
There's nothing like a taco de tripa that's like perfectly fried crispy. I don't get it. I don't get when they get the soft tripa. Like, why would you do that?
Because that's like, it's too close to nature.
Sure is. Yeah. Oh, those tripa, the tripa tacos you brought were perfect.
So we got tacos de tripas.
Yeah.
Tacos de lengua.
Yeah.
Y tacos de buche, that they're my favorite.
Yeah.
You know, when I was in Juarez, that was a thing we did. Every Friday, we'll go to the same taco stand before going, no, coming from my grandma's house.
Yeah.
And the way they prepare it in Juarez is they boil it, they fry it with chorizo, and then they put it in a tortilla.
What is buche?
Buche is stomach linen.
Stomach lining. Linen. Stomach linen by Downey.
Cha cha cha,
Charmin. That's toilet paper. Oh my God. Okay, okay, okay.
Entra por el mismo canal.
Because my aunt thought it was like the gobble of a turkey. You know how?
Porque así dicen el
porque
buche.
Porque así le dicen también, right?
Uh-huh.
Al buche.
Uh-huh.
But it's not. When you're eating buche tacos, usually they're stomach lining.
Lining, yeah.
Of what animal?
La.
Ooh,
la
see?
Vaca. Hey,
la vaca. Moo. Okay.
Uh-huh.
You don't even know, bitch. It's probably pork.
No, es de la vaca.
Yeah.
Pues tiene que estar grande para que aguante.
You're right. You're right.
Yes. So those are my favorite. And they were soft, but perfect.
Okay.
And then we got a vampiro, ¿se llaman?
Yeah.
Tell everybody what a vampiro is.
I have no idea. It's like a mula, I think, but with a tostada instead.
And what is a mula?
It's like, it's como una sincronizada, but not.
Like an open face sincronizada.
Yeah.
But with a crispy tortilla.
On top. So like, tortilla, and it can be flour or corn.
Uh-huh.
It's regional. Un pedazo de queso, the meat, the toppings, the salsa, and then another tortilla on top. So a vampiro is with salsa and with...
Y guacamole.
Guacamole con, con una tostada.
Con todo el show.
Oh my gosh. That was the bomb. And you bought carne asada fries?
It was carne asada and... ¿cómo se llama? Al pastor fries.
I'm pretty sure I'm going to die right now. That's
yes.
good. That's great.
Oh, God.
Okay, I'm going to be honest. The whole, I get it. I understand. Like, if you're drunk or something and hungover, the fry combo, you know, like the fries with all the shit on it. I don't know. It's too much for me.
Bish, nos la acabamos todo, güey.
I know, but it's too much. I'd rather have like super nachos, you know, like nachos with all that shit
that's
on top.
That's true. No, and that's what I thought I got.
It's a texture thing.
Yeah. I really wanted like nachos, but they didn't have that. So I was like, okay, let's do the fries.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's get into the episode for this week.
Yes.
So last week we took you to Dallas, and this week we're going to go to Austin, Texas.
Vámonos al Austin.
Hey! Okay, Veronica Castro.
And we had the pleasure to interview a power couple, an art power couple from Austin.
Oh, yes.
Xochitl Solis and George Pasterk. So you know what? It's a very small world. Because I met George like 15 años ago, like 10 years ago.
Uh-huh.
And then...
That's 15.
Yes. And then... And a year ago, I find out that you and Xochitl, who's George's wife, were in the same show in Mi Tierra in Denver, Colorado. So
that's right.
And then
small world, dude.
Mm-hmm. And this interview, we've been trying to do this for like 2 years. So the stars align in Austin, and here you have it.
All right. Well, we're going to take a little break first, and then we'll be back with Xochitl and George. Here we are.
Otra vez, leyendo and promoting.
Oh my God, let's talk about BlueApron.com.
Yes, you know they're the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery en los Estados Unidos.
I do. I did know that. I have the same email that you have. Yes.
Yes, and they establish partnerships with over 150 local farms and fisheries.
Oh my gosh, that is so important.
¿Y qué comiste esta semana?
Okay, listen, I just got my Blue Apron in yesterday. Mm-hmm. I always have them delivered on the same day of the week.
Yes.
It's so convenient. I got fresh cavatelli and kale with fried rosemary and walnuts.
Ay, te salió bien.
Shout out to my future bowel movement. I got cauliflower steaks and purple barley salad with brown butter and grape sauce.
What?
Grape sauce?
Wow.
A whole new world. Don't you dare close your eyes. Broccoli and cheddar turnovers with pea green and apple salad. Now I've heard of apple sauce. I've heard of apple cider.
But apple salad? ¡Qué pedo! Check out this week's menu and get $30 off your first order with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/latinos. You will love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron. So don't wait.
That's blueapron.com/latinos. Blue Apron, a better way to cook. Howdy, partner.
¿Cómo está, mujeres?
I'm good. Please don't call me that.
Okay, señorita.
I identify as a señorita, yes. Thank you.
Well, today we have a very special episode. We have some dear friends to the podcast, some dear friends to us personally, and an amazing couple of cultural makers here in Austin, Texas. We have Xochitl Solis and George Pasterk. Buenas tardes, días, because it's lunch.
Howdy.
Hi.
¿Cómo están?
Hola, hola.
Muy bien.
Pajaritos en cola.
Thank you. Good, thanks.
Thank you.
So, what did we just eat?
good question.
Vietnamese food trailer food from Saigon, Levin.
Levin.
Oh, that's what we just ate.
Si.
Yes.
Okay. I didn't know.
Claro.
we have Thai tortas and Thai tallarines. That's it was so good.
It was delicious.
It was when I had to decide what to eat, I really try hard not to find vegan food because I feel like that's all we've been eating the past 24 hours.
That was on your insistence, my friend.
It is. But that was enough for me for the rest of the year.
There's a lot of really great vegan food here, though, in Austin.
It is.
Surprised me.
It makes me want to convert. But
really?
Not yet. In Austin, I could do it. In Vegas, I don't think I could.
Yeah, no sé.
And in Mexico, no se diga. I don't think I could do it. So for those of you who might be familiar, Xochitl Solis, we started talking about her in the podcast first because she did a big favor to Latinos Who Lunch to bring all the Chulita vinyl clubs, chulitas together and bring an awesome playlist that we played in an episode episode in the beginning, towards the beginning of the year, right? And also Xochitl Solis and Favi share a space in the Denver Art Museum because they were in the same exhibition. Mm-hmm. Did you guys knew each other before that exhibition, or you met in Denver?
We met over at Arepas one time in Las Vegas.
Yeah.
That was our first encounter.
Get a little bit closer to the microphone.
That was our first encounter. You...
Yeah, get in there, girl.
I'm going to get in here.
Get in there.
Oh. Through you.
That's right. I've forgotten about that. I thought you guys met only in Denver.
No.
No.
No, we had we actually shared a meal in Las Vegas. Yeah.
Arepas.
Uh-huh.
Arepas.
Yeah.
Oh, there you go.
The world.
But Xochitl, tell us a little bit about yourself. So we were in the Mi Tierra show.
We were in the Mi Tierra show.
And I know you as a visual artist here based out of Austin, Texas. And now you're showing all over the world.
Wow. I am. So born and raised in Austin. I'm a Tejana that has roots here many generations. I'm a visual artist and also a visual arts leader in the community here in Austin. And I've done a wild variety of arts administration stuff. And I'm coming up to my first full year of being a self-employed visual artist. So I've been traveling a lot. But yeah, Austin will always be my home and I always come back here.
How is it to be... What, self-employed in the arts? That's something you don't hear often.
Was it a hard decision for you?
No.
Yeah.
It wasn't a hard decision to like want to and know that it was necessary to commit to my practice as an artist, but I think financially, it just takes a bit of planning. And then, you know, previously I had been working for the art department at the University of Texas. I was there for almost 8 years, and I helped found an art center that is called the Visual Arts Center that's part of the art department there. And so I had a lot of, like, my own identity kind of wrapped up in directorship roles, my curatorial roles, things like that that were, like, heavily connected to an academic institution. And so it took a little bit of, yeah, it took me a while to, like, make the decision and then also make the plan to do it. But then once I did, it was
liberating.
Very, yeah, so liberating. Mm-hmm. And, it radically changed like my practice in just the way that I spend time thinking about my work. I mean, time, I think in general just means something completely different because I don't have to like catch a couple hours in the studio before being in an office and then catch a few hours at the end of the day. So that, you know, things just expanded for me to be able to like, more naturally like think about and meditate on ideas that were, you know, that are central to my practice.
I feel like when you can dedicate 24 hours to your craft or your work, you don't I don't think you understand how much you need it till you're actually doing it.
Yeah.
When I got my fellowship to just write for a year, the first week I was like, oh, this is the secret.
Well, I mean, I don't know. For me personally, it took a couple of months. Before I like
to get into that mode
to really get yeah. It didn't happen immediately because I still was feeling very like once you like unmoor yourself from like a fixed position for so long, like it took me a while to like be comfortable in that space because I always felt like, and I think we've had this conversation before, Justin, about our practice where it's like I always feel like I should be jam packing my days mm-hmm. with stuff. And I had been so used to that. Like I'd had my studio practice for many, many years while I was doing arts administrative stuff. So I had always squeezed everything in and when the end of the day doing like, you know, 20 different things for, you know, wearing different hats. And now I'm just wearing only a couple of hats. Like it feels like I'm not doing enough.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that was a big thing for me is like having the whole day to do something. Instead of, because I'm most productive like 6 p.m. and on, because that's been my life, right?
Going
to work 9 to 5,
yeah,
and then studio time until you're too tired,
yeah,
and go home at midnight or whatever,
yeah.
So like making the shift from like, oh, I can work in the morning now on my art, like this is weird,
wow.
Yeah. And then like like you said, feeling guilty if you don't do 20 things.
Yeah.
Like, I'm like, okay, I got to throw a thing in the washer. And then while that's happening, I can glue this and that can be drying while I do this. And like, you're like, okay, I'm having a productive day, right? And then you feel guilty if you're like, oh, I'm going to watch TV for a little while.
Yeah. Or like read.
Yeah. Or yeah. What is that?
Or rest.
Yeah, or rest.
Take a nap, right? All right, George, ¿cómo estás, amigo?
Bien rico.
What do you do here in Austin, Texas?
I just, you know, hang out with Sochi and be the silver fox of a husband that I am.
Okay.
This is true.
Pictures coming through Instagram soon. Yeah.
This is going to be a very visual show.
But tell everybody what you do with Church of the Friendly Ghost, and because both of you are working together also, or have been working together for a while in other projects. So.
Yeah, I mean, with Church of the Friendly Ghost, I mean, it precedes me. I came in like in 2007, and it's like improvisational, experimental, whatever, you know, music series.
It's awesome.
I mean, with a real emphasis on, I mean, you kind of two or three part, like an emphasis on providing a space that, because Austin is the music capital of the world, if you haven't noticed. But, you know, it's a bar-based economy, and, yeah. and a bar doesn't necessarily lend itself to every kind of music or most kinds of music.
Yeah, yeah.
So first, providing a space for that, and then providing a space for, you know, musics and artists that aren't necessarily either willfully obscure or been obscured by history or somehow marginalized, you know, which extends, I think, naturally to, you know, just involving different communities in that sort of thing.
And you've been working with them for how long now?
Since 2007. Wow. Like my friend Henna Chow and I were volunteers, and we were in and out and in and out. And mm-hmm. then the main person, Aaron, who started it, moved to Chicago, and he was like, "Hey, I'm leaving. You guys should be. You guys should run.
You should be the leaders."
Yeah. And we're like, "Oh, really?" And then we figured out how that worked, and so we have the series, and then we have the festival in the summer.
And I will put the links on the website, yeah, so you can get ready for next year and check out some of the amazing events that George puts together for Church of the Friendly Ghost. Mm-hmm. And also, what do you guys do together for Mass? Tell us.
Yeah. I mean, we with Church of the Friendly Ghost, and when Sochi was at the VIC, we have been putting together events and performances as long as we've known each other, you know. So yeah. I mean, like, immediately started putting together.
Early when we started dating.
Yeah. Tell us about that. And
how did you meet?
We met through mutual friends, yeah. But the story that I like to tell, which I guess that's how you lock a thing, lock narratives into history, is you just keep telling the same version over and over again. Yes. But the story I always tell is, well, we did meet through mutual friends, but George used to work at the Law Library, which is just up the hill from mm-hmm. where the art building is and the mm-hmm. art center that I used to work at is. And I was director of public programming, so I was the one in charge of doing secondary programs and that includes film series, lectures, artists in residence that were sort of time-based programs, performances. And so I basically after hours things, like I would imagine programs that would give another opportunity, another door, window, or whatever into the exhibition space. So,
and I'm not just saying this because it's so cheap, but it was really one of the best art spaces in town, and the programming and the secondary programming and the events were just solid and beautiful. So I just went to everything. And then, you know.
So he would come. And so he had to wear a tie at the law library. Because I guess you can't check out books to lawyers unless you
The professors would show up like the professors would show up in clothes that looked like they had not only slept in but like slept on the lawn. But
that's very common in UNLV.
But the circulation, yeah, but the circulation staff for some reason had to wear a freaking tie.
Oh my gosh.
So George would walk down from the law library to the events and the art department after work.
Yeah.
Yes.
Míralo.
And so he was always this weirdo in my audiences wearing a tie. And I'm like, who is that guy? And, you know, friends of friends would be like, oh, you know, that's my friend, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, that guy is weird. And of course, it's always like the weird ones that like capture your affection.
Yes.
So, you know, we started dating and, you know, after running into each other a bunch at events and obviously we would talk.
And I thought she was one of the cool kids.
Thanks.
I had no chance.
So we started collaborating on programs like pretty early on and using the university's resources and the resources that COTFG has as a 501c3 and would get grants too. We would invite artists to come and do performances and be part of bigger festivals in Austin, and did that for a couple of years. And so now currently we are both members of a collectively run art space in Austin called Mass Gallery. Mm-hmm. And we've collaborated. We haven't done anything in a while, but this is the first time we've gotten to do anything since I left the university and kind of that realm. So we're working on another kind of time-based performance, public engagement kind of exhibition.
Big.
thing that's happening.
It's a series of events,
It's a series of events. Uh-huh. So it's like, it's instead of an exhibition, we're slotting in that 5 weeks that we normally have.
Yeah.
You know, more static shows.
Yeah.
And I wanted to ask you about this because one of the things that we've been engaging in conversations with other people in town is about the D word, diversity, right?
Oh, yeah.
And what does it mean to you guys, and how difficult has been to a place that it's increasingly being gentrified in terms of the arts? What is your role in trying to bring that diversity into these art spaces or these spaces you guys are creating in terms of, you know, cultural events?
That's a big and you know, I'm still part of the organization, but you know, I with some organizations it's a negotiation. It doesn't seem like it should be, but sometimes it is. Uh-huh. I mean, COTFG, I mean, I'm lucky that it's
Church of the Friendly Ghosts.
Yeah, Church of the Friendly Ghosts is predominantly woman run. With two women of color.
Yeah.
You know, I bring something like that and say, hey, let's do this, blah, blah, blah. And they're like, yes.
No need for justification.
Yeah, no need for justification. I don't need to explain. I don't need to say why.
That's the best. Those are the best spaces.
Yeah. And then, but we, you know, we have all done that. We always wanted to do this thing, but didn't, you know, we were trying to figure out how to run an organization. Mm-hmm. And finally, we got into a space. And then what also thankfully happened is like other organizations took over for other things. Mm-hmm. And now we don't have to like do everybody's show. We can do things that we feel that are significant in a way that it involves communities or involves works or expressions that don't get and you know why?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't understand. If you're running you're running a experimental space or an experimental program, and why do you want to do the same five or six
people,
single white minimalists, you know? Yes. I mean, it's like John Cage, yeah, great, whatever.
Yeah. we talk about this in the podcast all the time.
You know, Stephen Reich, great. God, Philip Glass, over and over again.
Yeah.
Philip Glass.
It's just like in art museums. When you go to an art museum and then they have the same like pillar artists at every art museum, like, oh, cool. Like,
yeah.
Awesome. Another candy pile.
Wouldn't it feel powerful? wouldn't it be powerful? Don't people feel powerful like if they can build their own cannon? I mean, come on. Why are you like, why are you kowtowing to this?
Yeah, because that's true. Because we find the cannon, we're comfortable with it. It makes money. And then why do anything about it?
Yeah.
Which is what happens in so many. I feel like in every realm. because we've been getting letters from listeners that are having these problems in writing for TV or in schools. Yeah. It's complicated.
And I mean, we're lucky. We're not attached to a museum. We're not. I mean, we can do whatever we want.
Which is the beauty of what you guys do. Yeah. Which is the beauty of what you guys do, that you have a certain position in town where you can start dictating the nature of those spaces, which is a beautiful thing.
Something that I pay attention to, for example, with your work, Xochitl, is how you are able to navigate through different spaces, not only with your artwork, but with your other projects, like the Chulita Vinyl Club, for example. I know that you're going to have a workshop at the Denver Art Museum soon. And I heard that the Chulitas played at the Hammer in LA. Mm-hmm. So, and then I'm here in Austin, and I went to go to La Perla, right? Uh-huh. One of the last, like, Tejano
cantinas
in Austin.
Yeah.
Not only are you accessible, but you're also... you also have this platform as a visual artist showing in museums to also highlight, you know, Latino visibility or just be a part of that, which I think is so important and so awesome how you can do it on different aspects of with different aspects of what you do.
I think, like, for me, and thank you, for me, like, that really became more cohesive when I joined Chulita Vinyl Club. So I've been a part of Chulita Vinyl Club for a year and a half. And I'm the lead chula for the Austin chapter. So I'm the one that organizes bookings and you know, the one that answers all those emails when you guys holler at us in Austin. So, but it was really coming into a better understanding of my Latinidad. Mm-hmm. And how that dovetailed into my studio practice. It also happened to occur at the same time that I was researching work for Mi Tierra.
Yeah.
Which was the first time that I ever had been curatorially approached with an emphasis on my
identity.
Mm-hmm. And being asked questions, even though they were somewhat ambiguous from curators, about considering what it meant to me to be from Texas, what did it mean to me to have Mexican heritage. And then quickly thereafter, I had joined Chulita Vinyl Club because I have a huge collection of records. and have always been collecting records and fell in love with music from a very young age. My father played in Tejano bands when I was younger. And so I always remembered a record player being like in our living room. So I always played music. And then finding these beautiful women that had started Chulita Vinyl Club in Austin, and all of a sudden having these comadres, which I had never had before in my life. And then working on this theme that for Mi Tierra, and now a year and a half later from that moment, I'm really feeling like everything's kind of falling into place. I have a better understanding of myself, my role in the visual arts world, my role in just being able to contribute to cultural art spaces and the culture of Austin and the country and the world. Wherever I travel, I always talk about all those facets of my practice, because I wouldn't be complete with all of those different facets. Like, if I didn't get to share and play music with Chulitas and have that space, then I think at this point, I feel like my, you know, research methods and the things that I meditate on in the studio would be radically different. Now it seems to be all working in harmony, and it feels very complete and whole and
it's a good place to be.
Yeah. Yes. It feels really good.
Yeah. And I think, something that also helps is you've been a curator, an administrator, and part of these institutions, so you know how the cookie crumbles, basically.
I do. So, which, for better or worse, sometimes I get being like,
I know what's happening.
I know what's happening. I see you. I know what you're trying to do.
I see what you're saying. Yeah. But we've gotten a lot of emails from people who are frustrated because they really don't know how the system works sometimes. And when you don't know how it works, you you a lot of people give up, you know,
because they have a foot at the door, and that's the worst place, right? Where you're in the middle and you're like, you can just leave right away, or you can keep pushing and pushing and pushing.
Yeah. I mean, so what are some of the, I'm curious to share a certain comment that you might have.
Oh, like people trying to get a certain, maybe like a certain art show in their building, for example, but nobody's listening to them, or a mural painted, or
like writers in, let's say, a TV show, but they're just secondary writers. So when they see a big problem happening, there's nothing they can do because, again, they only have a foot at the door. They're still struggling, trying to go all the way.
Yeah.
And it becomes, it's a battle, and people get tired really fast because you also gotta survive, you gotta work, and you gotta do also many different things. So it's like you're fighting different battles at the same time. So it's refreshing to see people like you guys that have been in the center and made decisions, important decisions, and on top of that decided to leave, but not because you lost the battle, because you are going to continue that battle outside.
Yeah.
And that's important.
I mean, I think like I go back and forth between like wanting to not be so involved in just visual art spaces. One, because I've just been working as an art administrator for like a dozen years now, and it's a lot of work to, like, you know, I enjoy the work helping other artists realize their goals and dreams, and like you said, like, I have a foothold and I understand what needs to happen, and I also understand the network in such a way that I'm able to share that with artists that are just kind of entering into that field. But then it's also like there's part of me that thinks about the role that art spaces have in changing neighborhoods. That weighs on me a lot, especially in the city of Austin right now. We're just going through a really kind of violent and aggressive gentrification happening in our city. And I think not ignoring some of the other roles that art spaces have had in different other kind of hotbeds around the country, like LA and the Boyle Heights.
Yes, it's a big battle.
Gallery.
In El Paso right now, too.
Yes, in El Paso. Oh, my God, like this week. And just what that means to be, like, wanting to fight to sustain neighborhoods, but also thinking that there is value in having art spaces.
Yeah.
And I think it's like changing people's minds. Some of the things that George was saying, it's like when you come to the table with the people that operate art spaces or want to invite you to their festival to contribute, or like, well, have you considered like X, Y, and Z, when they're like, we want to bring culture to the people. And I was like, well, have you thought about the culture that already exists there? Have you asked them what they need instead of assuming what they need?
Yeah.
Because almost always your assumption is going to be wrong.
Exactly.
I mean, almost anybody, always. With any assumption, you know, like it's always better to have a better educated. Yeah.
Like, talk to people.
I went to this conference. We're part of this network of art spaces and artist-run spaces in the country called Common Field. It's a really great organization that, if you are who are listening, are part of a artist-run space or a collective-run, or you do something programming, arts programming, Common Field's a really great resource. They're very smart and educated and open folks that run that, and they have conferences. I think the next one is happening in LA, but the one last October was in Miami, and we talked a lot about gentrification and the role of art spaces. That's when the Boyle Heights, they were on a panel and heard from what their struggles were, and then subsequently some of their successes of like some of the galleries leaving that area. And that was a huge part of that conversation. But someone spoke, and I can't remember who it was, but he was saying, you know, if you move into this neighborhood and you think you're bringing them, like, you know, something wonderful, and
guess what, Mimi?
Yeah, exactly. And he's like, but you're afraid to, like, you're afraid of your neighborhood, or you're afraid to go knock on the door of the neighbor because you don't know, you maybe there's a language barrier or whatever. Like, that's probably a sign that you shouldn't be there.
Yeah.
And it was just like, no question.
And it also goes back to what George was saying about the canon. When you think there's already established canon and that's the only thing that you should follow, that's when you get those mindsets of and yours is not culture, right. Mine is high culture,
and it also
and that's
creates,
what I'm going to help.
And also, you know, if you're in a space or the space that comes here and the people that are you know, in the audience or the people that are on the stage, you know, don't necessarily look like you or look, you know.
Yeah.
It's not...
Visibility, yeah.
It's, yes, visibility, but it's also not like, oh, there's mi gente there. You know, I'm invited here, you know.
Correct.
I mean, you can be as gregarious and da-da-da-da, but, you know, if...
Until you see...
And you see, which is something that, you know, Henna really started talking about as an Asian American woman, you know, and like herself trying to build up role models for herself, mm-hmm. as a musician and, you know, really wanting to create programming, you know, kind of outside of the regular, you know, like programs in which, you know, kids from different communities can come and see
can participate,
people,
yeah.
And can participate and can see people that look like them doing this type of music that, you know, hey, there's this thing.
Yeah.
And I think it's been surprising as, you know, George and I have been working with Mass Gallery as collective members for 5 years, four years. And it's a mixed group of, mm-hmm. of people. It hasn't always been as diverse as I think it is currently. We just got some new members.
And it's a lot. It's like 13 people. So
But some of the conversations, I think, have been really surprising and frustrating in the last 2 years that we've had where... Mm-hmm. We're like, we want to do, you know, more diverse programming. And they're like, well, we'll do something for Juneteenth.
Oh, shit.
And I'm like, who just said that? I'm like,
For Hispanic Cultural Month.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hispanic heritage.
Heritage. Oh, heritage. Hispanic heritage.
La niña, la pinta y la
Santa María.
Or the conversation, which is like, you know, Barfville is like, well, we'll consider that. But, you know, our top priority is obviously going to be quality.
Yeah, that's...
No, that's actually...
Yeah, yeah. I almost punched somebody in the neck.
Wow.
Well, no, it was like, the best dog whistle. We only want good work. Which is, damn. It's a straw man argument. I mean, nobody has told you that you should accept bad work. That wasn't exactly what we said.
Wow. Destroy the canon, people. Yeah, yeah. Destroy
it. And these are from people that are like friends.
No, yeah, they're friends and woke in certain ways.
In certain aspects.
But you know,
but just
semi-woke.
Semi-woke.
Right.
Half-lidded.
Sorry.
Half-lid.
They're sleepwalking.
They're sleepwalking.
And so then, you know, going back to that, was like sometimes I get exhausted about being working in that sort of leadership of the field. And then I'm like, nope, I still need to be here because if I walk away, maybe this person is just going to continue doing this thing. And so like there's a lot of like I feel a lot of responsibility to like just be present and just, you know, I'm the president of the board of Mass right now. And I'm a woman of color.
Yeah.
It's a maker as well. So like I'm maybe showing a next generation of students or artists in the city that you can do this too. And that feels kind of like self-important.
Yeah,
but at the
too.
Same time, it's like if you don't see yourself in these spaces, you just think you just don't belong.
And it's mm-hmm. And I mean, to throw in the little continental theory.
Do it.
Well, Deleuze and Guattari. I mean, I always go back to this thing. They have a thing about intensive and extensive change. So like extensive change is like, you know, feminism for many years was just white feminism. And it's like, mm-hmm. oh, we'll let in some people of color. And like, oh, they're feminists too.
Yeah.
but intensive change is when you join a group and you change the how the group is structured, the paradigm, you switch it, you know. So, I mean, there is, you know, I say of like inviting people into spaces, oh, you can do this type of music too. But it's also to see, to bring people in and give them ownership of this thing, mm-hmm. to express themselves in this particular medium that they maybe hadn't come to them, and to change it,
yes.
to change it, to do that in, intensive, that intensive change,
yeah,
is, you know, is possible, yeah. you know, and sometimes it's like you have to fight your way in, but you know, every once in a while, it'd be nice if, you know, somebody opened the door.
But how amazing it is when you actually won a couple of those battles.
Like, yeah, yeah. No, it's great.
Yeah. You're actually moving forward, which yeah. is important. With that in mind, I was thinking about that yesterday because George and I were hanging out. He played some Tejano music for me.
Ooh. What did he play for you?
Oh, the Texas Tornadoes.
Uh-huh. It was so badass, and it made me think.
I can't believe you've never heard of them.
Exactly. That's exactly my point, that there's a lot of, for example, a lot of Latinx podcasts are getting attention because, you know, we're speaking Spanglish and this and that, but these have been part of our communities here for generations. Yeah. So when I hear Tejano music from the 50s, the 60s, like, it's never changed. It's just that people did not pay attention or somehow for some segments of population, those singers have been forgotten. This is one of the reasons why I think what Chulita Vinyl Club is doing.
I mean, I just to nerd out on music a little bit, and I'm by no means a music historian, but just through the work and the collecting and research, just from talking to my other Chulitas, Chulita Vinyl Club was founded in Austin, Texas. And that, I think, speaks a lot, because a lot of people think that Austin is not as brown. It's not as brown or, you know,
as LA
or San Antonio, even like other areas of Texas. But it was founded here in Austin, Texas, out of a need from our founder seeing like, hey, there's women here. And this is something I want to go back to. But there are women here that if we come together and empower each other, if we become a crew, if we become like, you know, an awesome, boss babe gang of yeah. like mujeres, then like we're going to be stronger. And I see in Austin, we're a little bit diluted. We're out there, but yeah. you know, it's not like San Antonio where you walk down the street and you see large communities of people of color. Mm-hmm. It's not in Austin. It's just straight up not.
Yeah.
And that can be very intimidating / scary sometimes mm-hmm. where you're like, you just feel like you're in a foreign country a little bit. But this is my hometown, like seriously, many generations in Austin. So this is where I can touch the earth and I can feel where my ancestors have been. This is it to me. Just thinking about Austin. Wait, where is I going with that?
It was going. It was good. It was good.
I know, but I wanted to go back. Like, that's why I got sidetracked about
the Tejano music. And
yes. I'm back.
Okay.
So finding these other women, I had always collected Tejano music and labels like Joey and Dinah. I mean, there's a ton of mm-hmm. labels of Norteños and
Tex-Mex
mm-hmm. music that's in Spanish. It's bilingual in Spanish and it's in Spanglish. A lot of this, I mean, I just played you Nicky Villarreal, like his La I Gotta Go song.
Yes.
Where in the song he shouts out to the owner of an HEB that he's going to go hang out with.
A supermarket here in town.
Which is, yeah, Texas-based mm-hmm. supermarket. If you are from Texas or passed through, spent any time here, you probably have an affection for HEB.
Yes.
You love it.
That's where I go.
But there are these labels, and going back to what you were saying, like being surprised to hear the sort of genre of Tejano, a lot of those labels are from, you know, Mexican American folks in the 50s and 60s that were not getting just their music was here. Playing in the cantinas, playing venues here,
but
playing the pulgas, you know, mm-hmm. on Sunday. But it wasn't being, you know, Capitol Records isn't going to put it yeah. out on their label. Mm-hmm. So they just started their own label. And
yeah.
it's all in yes. the Rio Grande Valley. Like, all these labels come out of Alice, Victoria,
and there's a little
McAllen,
bit of that in New Mexico,
which
too.
You can drive through in a second. But yeah. there's like three music labels that pressed records that came out of a tiny, tiny town in
That's
South
so
Texas.
Cool.
And was able to distribute music to people and share the music that was really local in a way. So,
yeah.
you know, I feel so fortunate to be able to be a music lover, but to have all this like history, like pressed in wax,
and bring it back and bring it back to the kids, which is important because when every time I see praising of Spanglish hip hop, which is great, I mean it's awesome, but I always miss that piece of history where it's like, no, there's generations and then generations of artists that have been doing that type of work, almost like protest music, because when you are creating outside of the center and you're creating your own spaces, that's like a political statement right there.
Yeah.
And the fact that you're doing it, and on top of that, you're doing it in Spanglish, like that was badass. So I think that we need to recognize that more often, especially when it comes to music, because Tejano, for example, me coming from the north of Mexico, Tejano music was always a joke. Tex-Mex music was always a joke. But we always miss that political aspect of it and how much those artists fought. Like, Johnny Canales was a joke, you know what I mean? But but we forgot how important the legacy is. I mean, that's that legacy that we're talking about is what created one of our most important icons right now, which is Selena.
Yeah.
So I guess I've been thinking about it since yesterday, since George played me some awesome Tejano music.
Well, in Texas is crazy. Like, since moving here, you know, there's things that I'd been listening to and people I'm aware of. And I'm walking around and I'm like, oh, they're from Texas. Oh, that person's from Texas. Texas is a big state, but I think there is also that political aspect because a lot of these people, like a lot of like, you know, sort of out and experimental people were, you know, you have Paulino Oliveras, you have, you know, free jazz coming out of Texas. You know, with free jazz, you think of the coasts. You know, it's like, no, it was coming out of Texas. No, I mean, it was born out of Texas.
You know, awesome.
You know, with Ornette Coleman. I mean, he was a Texan, you know.
There's going to be a lot of links in this episode, but I'm going to add them all into the website.
You know, here we're all about recommending brown businesses or artists or influences. And so we're going to wrap up. But before we do, is there like a book you're reading, a restaurant you're loving right now? Anything you want to recommend to our listeners?
Well, I think George and I both love this book called Uproot.
Oh, yeah.
That we worked on a project. And it was funny because you were talking about John Cage. But it made me think of the project that we worked on with Jace Clayton. Called the Julius Eastman Memorial Dinner. And Julius Eastman, you probably know the history of more,
Julius
more
Eastman, yeah, yeah. Do. Speaking of, you know, like bringing up people that were present during a certain historical canonical era, like the Loft era in New York, where people like Terry Riley, Steve Reich, Philip Glass all came out of that and rose to the top. And then you have people like Julius Eastman, who was, you know, who was black, who was queer, who was like
unapologetic,
awesome. You know,
yeah,
you know,
I mean,
his pieces are called gay, you know, there's another one I can't even say on the radio, you know, there's gay guerrilla, you know,
wow,
and awesome. He pissed off John Cage, it was awesome, a great story, but he was doing this sort of type of not exactly minimalist, but his own version of this, and just writing crazily and studying with everybody that he was supposed to be studying with. But
so Jace Clayton is also aka DJ Rupture.
So he did
put together a piece in honor of Julius Eastman, this composer that George was talking about. And that's how we met him. We did a program with him
it on NPR. One of the few times I will admit that NPR led me to something. But I thought, oh yeah, this is kind of big. We can't. And then
I told
Sochi, and Sochi's like,
it's the only iteration of this particular project that has happened in the South of the United States.
Wow.
I mean, it's like traveling over through Europe right now. Mm-hmm. So we brought it to Texas and we met this guy, Jace. And he was working on this book, Uproot, Travels in 21st Century Music and Digital Culture, at the time. And so when it came out, we got it. And it is amazing.
It's amazing.
I mean, you can look, I'm showing it to you all now. It's dog-eared like a million times. It's so great.
And he's super smart, and it's written more than a, like, it's, you know, it's not like an academic book, but it's you know, it's a journalist.
Accessible. It's a journalist. Very accessible. Very accessible. He talks about his travels. He talks about cultural appropriation. I mean, this book has also like influenced a lot of my thought as an artist that works in paint and collage, thinking about collage and image appropriation. Yeah. So, and then as a DJ with using, you know, other people's music and sharing that and making playlists off of that. And so I think it's like really ripe for for the moment, but also has a lot of information if you're working with ideas of cultural appropriation, or you're thinking about that in really progressive ways about like, obviously we all appropriate something at times. And I think just, and I don't think there's any denial in this book about him using other people's culture, because he travels all over the world and brings sound samples back into his work as a DJ. Mm-hmm. But it's like thinking about it in this like really positive and progressive and very like accountable way, whereas like you can share somebody's music and not like ram over it.
Take
and,
over the entire culture. And take culture.
It over and put erase your name the original, on it, you where know. The original yeah. origin.
Hello,
you know, origin
Moby. it was in Jace's book.
It's in Jace's book. Yeah. So, but there's other stuff. I mean, it's like it's full of anecdotes about like just meeting other musicians that are DJs that, you know, are using other people's music. But again, you know, working in collage, which is my studio practice, a lot of the things he talked about there works, I think, in the visual, if you have a visual practice as well. So.
Excellent.
That's so my like top.
So say the name of the book again, so just so we.
It's forget. Called Uproot: Travels in 21st Century Music and Digital Culture. It's by Jace Clayton, aka DJ Rupture. Yeah. That's my. I mean, this is one that we both love. Ours, so that's what I brought to the
that's,
table.
No, that's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, really, it's like it's we love of, it.
I can't top that one, really. Yeah.
Do you have any recommendations?
I can make one up right now. Absolutely.
Well.
I'm going to go because I'm just going to say you guys touched on a lot of things. This is you're going to have a big job putting all the links on the website. But
yes, ma'am.
I've changed my mind about a lot of things in the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. And one of the things is Tex-Mex food. Because for the longest time, I was a hater. And I was like, what the fuck is all this cheese on everything? Like, what is going on here? Why is it smothered everything? And now I can't get enough of it because I just had to change my perception of what I was eating.
Yes.
Before I was thinking, this is like fucked up Mexican food, right? Like, this is inauthentic Mexican food. Mm-hmm. And now I think of the idea of authenticity totally different.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, this dish that I'm eating right now, this burrito smothered in green chili cheese sauce with tamale cakes and no sé qué, no sé cuánto. like this, there are so many histories sitting on this plate. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. This dish is important.
Yeah.
It's anthropological.
It's a diaspora.
I think it's beautiful now. Yeah. And just changing my mind before.
That is
ordering the food.
It never occurred to me. That's beautiful. Yeah.
It's just been an incredible experience because when I walk up to that, you know, Mexican / poke / Thai fusion, whatever the fuck I'm eating, I'm like, you know what? This is awesome. You know,
something's been made here.
Yeah, an open heart. and you know, instead of hating a food because it's not what you think it should be, you know, and I think Austin, there's a lot of that happening in Austin. Some of it is fucked up. Like, I'm gonna call out. No, I'm not gonna do it.
Wait, no.
I forgot the name of the place, but I'll just tell you guys. There's a truck at Liberty, that bar. Mm-hmm. And they gave me kimchi. I ordered kimchi.
Mm-hmm. The fried kimchi.
Yeah, fried kimchi, but it was just like fried pickles. Mm-hmm. I'm like, just call it fried pickles. I was expecting the cabbage.
Yeah.
I know kimchi can be cucumbers, but come on. Yeah. Anyways. Gentrified kimchi.
You have to have the beet fries.
Oh, yeah. I have to try it.
And the little buns. Anyway, sorry.
No, but... shout out to Tex-Mex. That's all I got to say.
I'm just awesome. So happy that you are spending time in Texas.
Yeah.
I think it's a very special place. It's very special to me.
It's so weird because I'm from Texas,
basically,
but I never attached myself to Texas history. So just like Favi said, like, it's taking me a while to appreciate this this is the wrong word, but this hybrid, like, cultural things, including, I mean, New Mexican food, the same.
Yeah.
The first time I arrived to Mexico, I'm like, what the fuck is that? And now I crave it all the time. And I go to Vegas, and I'm like, this is not New Mexico food.
I mean, I think, like, thinking about Texas a lot, what's helped me, like, really become more rooted in my Tejana roots is reading a lot of Ansel Dua. Thinking about Selena. Thinking about all of, like, how these people have survived in Texas, what it means to persist and what it means to take a little bit from this place and that place and this place and make it your own. And I think that's, like, what I'm most proud of about being Tejana.
The border is this cultural thing. Well, I have one recommendation, and I just wanted to bring it back to last night, because so the music that George was showing me was Texas Tornadoes, but we started a conversation about visibility of Latinos, like you and I've been talking about this for a long time in Vegas, and I looked into Freddie Fender, who was part of the Tornadoes, and I think he had a residency in El Rancho. So, like, there's...
You said you saw him.
I saw Freddie Fender.
Yeah.
At El Rancho.
El Rancho in a casino in...
El Rancho. El Rancho, okay. Vegas.
El Rancho, Vegas.
But Las Vegas. The conversations about Vegas are always, like, Elvis and, like, the Rat Pack and...
Yeah.
Have you seen pictures of Freddie Fender?
Yeah, it's right here. I have one.
Oh, When I saw him, we're talking.
He had the most amazing platform shoes that I had ever seen.
This album that I want to recommend is called Freddie Fender and Friends Live in Las Vegas.
Oh, awesome!
Yeah. Nice. So I want to keep pushing that. The fact that there was an entertainment history of Latinos in Las Vegas that we need to start talking about a little bit.
And Freddie from Texas.
Yes, and from Texas. So there you go.
He's from the valley. Yeah. His face is on a water tank. In the valley.
There you go.
Gracias. Well, Sochi, George, thank you so much for welcoming to your home.
Yeah, thanks.
And having lunch with Latinos Who Lunch.
Yes, and thank you for letting me stay in your couch.
You're welcome.
And hopefully this is the first out of many. We've been trying to do this episode for a year now.
For a while, yeah.
So I'm glad that it finally happened. So thank you very much, guys.
Yeah, thank you.
And we're back.
Ay, qué maravilla con esos dos.
Ay, Dios mío. Qué bellos. Oh, I miss them so much. I miss Austin so much. Such amazing people over there.
I love it over there. If I could, I could just move there. Pero no hay chamba. No hay chamba.
Well, it's too humid for me, but...
Yes. Humid. But you know what? This type of conversations is what George and I used to have all the time. Te extraño, amigo. It was so awesome to hear it again.
And shout out to Sochi. It was so cool to get to know her and hang out in her town. We had this really awesome studio visit for like 4 hours one day.
That's awesome.
It was just really cool to be around the cultural bearers of Austin, Texas.
Sopatelas. And make sure to follow them in all the platforms, because they have not one, not two. Like, they have like 5 projects going on, and all of them are so, so amazing.
Yeah, Babelito will put the links on latinoswholunch.com. Go under our episodes tab and see it there.
That's right. And as we promised last episode, we're going to start reading your emails, your iTunes messages, and also listen to your recordings.
iTunes messages.
Así es. iTunes reviews.
Reviews and voice messages.
Ah, ya, ponlo.
Okay. Here's one from our friend Cristina Muniz or
Muñiz.
Muniz. There's no ñ in the email.
Pero a lo mejor no le sale. So.
Oh, no le salió. Okay, Cristina Muniz.
Or Muniz.
Hey, Fabi Fav and Babelito. I just got home from errands, and I was listening to the podcast when you mentioned Lin-Manuel Miranda. And I was, real talk, made me laugh out loud so hard. And you know what? I had this discussion with my sister. We love the darn Moana movie. We just love it. And I was like, doesn't this suck that we have to gravitate and hold on to, like, oh my god, there's a dark-skinned female animated character and it's a kick-ass movie. And in reality, it doesn't represent us, and you're right. But the thing is, it's so sad that we have to, like, take what we can get, and it's just so shitty. It is so shitty. Anyway, I love the podcast. I'm always trying to tag y'all up. Peace. I love you. Everything is so good about the Latino Who Lunch podcast. Love you guys. Bye. Hi, I forgot. My name is Christina Muniz from Kansas City, Missouri, and I'm a painter. And anyway, that's it. Bye.
Oh my God, we love you, girl. Thank you.
And you know, I do see you in social media.
Yes.
People that follow us all the time, and people that have been following us since the beginning, Academic Mommy, you know who you are.
Yeah.
I know exactly who you guys are. So thank you very much for those messages. Good point.
Yes.
Lin-Miranda?
Lin-Manuel
no,
Miranda.
Gracias.
Okay, why don't you like him?
You know, the whole thing seems like a empathy fest. And you know how I feel about
empathy.
That shit. It's just like, oh, I feel bad about all brown people.
Really?
And it's like enticing for white tears. I don't like that shit.
You know, I go back and forth because when Hamilton first came out, I was like, wow, cool. This is going to be awesome. And then I started to like think about who their audience was, and then like, okay, is he just like rapping for white people? And then it's like impossible for a normal person to get a ticket unless you're like a rich person or you're connected. So then you're like
alerta roja,
and then it's like nobody raps like that. Like I'm not even gonna try to do it, but it's I can't even listen to it now. It's like certain things bother me so much now. Oof. Like when I hear Lena Dunham talk, for example, it makes me cringe in the same way. I'm like,
y tanto que la
quería. I know, and I loved her so much. And I used to love Lin-Manuel Miranda too, but
no.
It's just, but then I saw In the Heights recently, a performance here in Las Vegas, and I loved it.
And it's also him?
Yeah, it was his first big musical. Yeah, so I see both sides. Representation is important. Moana is an important movie. I'm glad that it exists.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I wish there was, you know, it's like there's this one brown composer now, and that's who they're going to use forever.
And she's absolutely right. We have so few icons, and we said this many times, and we get a hold of them like there's no tomorrow. But the reality is that there's so much and so many people doing such amazing thing, because I'm from Spain. Such amazing things, and we need to just pay attention instead of just having mass media boxed us into this thing.
Yeah.
With that said,
yeah,
what is it with all these big ass fucking companies doing podcasts right now? HBO has fucking podcasts, Univision, Telemundo. Déjenos en paz, váyanse a la chingada.
Dude, it's everybody has a podcast now.
Pero they have the platform. Leave us here, pobrecitos, with a free platform.
Or hire us to do podcasts for
them. ¿Y tú crees
que
nos van a contratar?
No.
Pues es.
But they will for Lin-Manuel Miranda. yeah, so thank you so much, Cristina, for sending that. You can follow her art, Cristina's art, on her Instagram at dried paintbrush. That is her Instagram handle.
Some amazing stuff. I've seen her stuff.
Yeah.
I dig it, girl. I dig it.
Okay. Well, you know, it's been such a great time hanging out with you, Babelito.
Usted también, Fabio. Usted también.
Oh, my gosh.
Let's finish this.
Do you have anything coming up, perhaps, in November 19th?
Yes, we have a fabulous... I was going to say music festival porque ya sabes cómo pienso. We have Podcasterio Fest. It's coming a couple of weeks.
Podcasterio Fest, like stereo?
Yes.
Yeah, what is that?
Podcasterio.
Hey.
And this is a festival that Café con Pam, that Nos Vemos en el Swap Meet, and Latinos Who Lunch is putting together. Latinos Who Lunch.
You said
Dios
it,
mío, estoy bien cansado, güey. And the idea was to bring all these wonderful podcasts. We have podcasts coming from Boston, from New York, shout out Radio Menea, from Texas, shout out The Colores and everybody else, Cabronas y Chingonas. We're all going to be in the same space. The tickets sold out in less than 2 hours.
Yeah.
It was amazing. So thank you everybody who got their tickets. There's still tickets available, which are VIP, which allow you to party with us afterwards. So remember, just go to Podcasterio Fest on Instagram and you can get all of your details right there.
Cool.
¿Y tú qué onda?
Oh my gosh. So there's been some new developments. Latinos Who Lunch is going back to school.
I never left school, bitch.
All right. I'm going back to school. Specifically, we're going to Wellesley College.
Qué prestigio.
In the greater Boston area.
Out.
I'm so excited. Maybe we'll meet some Bostonian podcast while we're out there.
That would be awesome.
So Latinos Who Lunch will be there November 17th for a full day of activities. And all the events are open to the public, so please join us. We're going to have a lunch at 12 p.m. We're going to do a lecture at 12:30. At 4 p.m., we're going to do a live podcast. Mm-hmm. And at 6, I'm going to have a show, a gallery reception and talk at the art department at the Jewett Art Gallery.
Qué elegancia la de Francia.
I know.
So, I can't wait. It's going to be awesome. I've never been to Boston, so I'm excited.
Really?
Never.
Oh, my gosh.
¿Qué se come ahí?
I don't know. I usually try to stay indoors because there's a lot of racism there. So I don't want anybody to catch me outside. Just
how
kidding.
About
Boston is great. We can go to the Sam Adams tour. We go to Sam Adams Brewery. We can go to the Freedom Trail. Go along the fictitious Paul Revere Trail. It's really fun. It's really fun. Go see the Boston Tea Party reenactment. You know,
God.
White people have not wanted to pay taxes for a long time. Okay, so we'll see you in LA on November 19th. But before that, East Coast will be in Boston at Wellesley on November 17th. All right, any more announcements, Pablito?
Oh, I'll be in New York on the weekend previous to that. So
cool.
So I'm going to try to get some of our favorite podcasts together just like you did.
Oh my God. Mm-hmm. That's
so
good. How proactive.
Morado Lens, Song Mess, Latinos Out Loud, if you're listening, let's get together.
Cool. And I think we already gave recommendations, right?
And Unravel, so Unravel too.
Unravel.
I know. Okay. Oh my God.
Okay. Well, it's been fun. As always, you can reach us at latinoswholunch@gmail.com. Visit us, latinoswholunch.com. And please, if you're on Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening to this podcast, please rate and review us. 5 stars.
5 stars only.
Because the more reviews we have, the more visible we are, and visibility is...
a trap. essential.
I'm Fabi Fab.
And this is Babelito.
Bye.
Ciao.